And congratulations on your IF Stone Award, awarded by IF Stone's son, Jeremy Stone. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guster, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website's democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
This is Randy Ferguson, inviting you into a place where love is quarrel and music's happening. The Velvet Room, Velvet Room, Velvet Room. Featuring nothing but good film music that puts you in the mood. Relationship conversations that makes you think about love. So tune in every other Monday nights from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. and rock out to the best R&B show in Long Island. Enter the room if you dare. Into the Velvet Room, Velvet Room, Velvet Room.
Yes, the Velvet Room. Hey, what's up, you all? How's it going? Hi, this is WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 megahertz on the FM band. It's a band. You call that a band. It's exactly 6 o'clock now. That means it's time for Off the Wall. Yo, yo, hi. This is the new hip-hop show on WUSB. Okay. Nah, I'm just kidding.
I'm in the wrong place then. I'm in the wrong place. I'll come back.
Okay. No. Wait, everybody. No, not everybody leave. This is really a different show. This is Off the Wall. With Emmanuel Goldstein, your host, and me. I'm Kyle. And as I said, Emmanuel
and
is
I
over
must
there.
Be, I must be Emmanuel then if you're Kyle.
Yeah, no, you're right there.
I got the wrong notes here. Hold on.
No,
a
you're
second.
There.
Let's fix this.
We'll get your notes right. But we come to you every Tuesday at about 6 p.m.
Yeah, we say about because we like to listen to this music and do other things too, visit with people here in the studio and occasionally.
Well, we adjust for chaos, yeah.
Adjust for chaos will cause more chaos. We do that sometimes.
As much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, as much as we're capable of, which is significant, actually.
Yes, we wield quite a bit of chaos.
Yeah. So, another Tuesday. It is Tuesday, right? We're not stepping on someone else's show.
No. Okay. I'm really sure that it is Tuesday right now. So.
I have that nightmare. You ever have that night where you wake up and you're doing radio, but it's the wrong day, and then the person that is supposed to be on is at the door and really angry?
I haven't had those yet, but
every
maybe
kid's had that nightmare.
Yeah, I have it with lockers. I have dreams about school lockers that I am terrified that I didn't study for whatever. Everybody's had those dreams.
Wait. Why
but
does
somehow the locker?
Why does the locker tie into you not studying for a test?
That's it. I don't know. I think it's just that school, that place, that personal box you had. In school, and it becomes a subconscious place you go.
Okay, wait.
No, I don't know.
Stop for a second.
What?
Think in your mind, right now.
Okay.
Listen for the sound of those lockers.
Wait.
No, Kyle, please.
No. How
listen
do you think in your
for
mind?
The sound. You know, if you did it, you wouldn't ask questions like this.
Okay.
In your mind, think about this.
Right.
Your school lockers slamming shut. Listen for that sound right now. Did you hear it? Did you hear the sound?
Yes.
And listeners, too, you can participate in this. Just close your eyes for a second and try to remember the sound of the school lockers slamming shut, because it's a sound that we all went through in high school, if we had lockers, that is. Yeah, I hear them. I hear them very, very plainly. We had a thin rectangular locker, uh-huh. And we had a little top one, too. Did you have the top one?
Yeah, I had a little cubby in the top.
Yeah.
I had lockers way back. I mean...
And then you were next to somebody, and they had the cubby thing was on top of yours. Somehow it unlocked when they unlocked theirs.
Right. Or did you have? And then the that was like your permanent one. I had. You know, you'd have to sort of share them in gym. You know, bring a lock.
Well, those are different lockers. I'm not
totally
talking about
different.
The gym lockers.
Yeah, they're different. Like none of them are really permanent.
You had to buy your own lock for those.
Right.
Whereas the ones in school had the lock attached to it.
So
it was very different.
Yeah, so we could trade stories about lockers. That's kind
I think
of
we already
of
have.
Before we really get started,
I
just want to remind everybody that you could stream this very show on WUSB.FM. There, I said it. That's it. That's all I want to say.
Well, that's great. And not only that, but you can stream all manner of shows that air here on WUSB.
Oh, yeah, we should. You know, we're allowed to say that. There are other programs on this very radio station that
those
are...
stations don't want you to say that there are other shows on their station that we want you to listen to. This station is a rare exception. They want us to talk about the other shows.
That's a magical part of community radio, but we're not going to get into that tonight. But what we will say is that there are other shows here that you could find archived, at least probably the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, name one show. Name one show. That you've listened to.
Me?
Yeah, and I'll try to name one show, too. It's not hard.
Everything New is Broken, again.
The show is called Everything is Broken. You're mixing it up with the BAI show, Everything New is Old Again. And
okay.
Merging the two together.
Okay. Saturday's a Party.
Okay.
And that's top of my list.
Filipito, Onda Nueva.
Ah, yes, Onda Nueva. Felix.
Yes.
And, mixtape's always good.
Mixtape is on Wednesday nights, and Chris Laporta is Global Rhythm. Well, he alternates with himself on Thursdays. There's just so
Rock
many
and
all kinds of, just and either tune to 90.1 or go to WUSB.FM on your dial and just keep listening. It's really cool to be able to do that.
I mean, I joked at the top of the hour about this, or when we opened it, was a, like, hip-hop show or something. But there are actually a couple of hip-hop shows.
We have some.
Shout out to all the hip-hop shows.
Yes.
You know, we love you too.
They appear at random times, but they also appear at regular times.
Fully. Okay,
but, you know, we do have our own show to consider.
Enough about superfluous externalities.
Yeah, because that's all we ever talk about.
We have pressing internalities to ruminate over.
Yes. We actually, we've done some artistic things in the last week or so.
We
saw the Nutcracker at Stony Brook, which was kind of cool.
Stoller Center, you're right.
We didn't mention that. That was last week. And it turns out they're a local company, just in the area. We thought it was something that they would bring in from far away. But no, right here, local kids and all kinds of people involved in that. And it's just, you know, I spent a lot of time talking about what's wrong with this place, but I also like to talk about what's right with this place. And there are so many cool performances and really first-class quality productions that come out of Stony Brook. So it's nice to be able to see something like that. And I don't know if I've ever seen the Nutcracker before, but we were really up close, and I was able to pretty much appreciate the entire thing.
Yeah, and support that. I mean, local companies, local venues getting together and then staging it at a campus like this. What's not to love there?
It's it's cheap compared to something you'd see in the city.
And everything else you see is pretty much virtual or, you know, just a digital file or a stream or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing live performance really, you connect with the show, the story. You're a part of it in a different way. We could go on and on. It's the same thing when watching live music, if you go to concerts or performances, recitals, stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's right up there, and they did an outstanding job.
They really did.
Putting that on here.
And right now the campus is completely dead. There's nobody here. I think we're the only two people here on the whole campus.
Yeah, I'm wondering about the lights. They really should, you know, have intelligent lighting. They could save so much money, like almost like 2.5 radio stations.
Turn off the lights, people. I mean, come on, downstairs, there's nobody in this building. Downstairs, turn off the lights. I mean, yeah, it'll be a little spooky. You know what? We're grown up. We can handle it. Save power that way, and maybe you'll turn off all the lights in all the buildings that people aren't in.
Yeah, and gosh, I don't know. It's just one of those one thing when there's no one here, it just stands out. You're like, God, there's so many lights on, and no one is using it. Yeah, when it's full of students and all that, yeah, you don't think twice. Of course, you're going to heat and keep the lights on and so on. But
well, they tell you to turn the lights off, so why can't we tell them to turn the lights off?
Well, anyway, Stony Brook Engineering, we're looking out for you.
Uh huh.
And I'm sure you care a lot.
Yeah, just random thoughts. And, you know, speaking of the art, too, we also went to Radio City Music Hall.
That was fantastic, yes. Very, very New York.
Well, here's the thing. All
spectacular.
Right? Yeah, okay. You know, that's what it's called. It's called the Christmas Spectacular. And I saw it when I was a little kid. And I kind of thought you'd get a kick out of it.
I was impressed.
Being artistically inclined yourself.
I like the dancing and
the Rockettes.
They're
pretty good. They show a lot of potential, those Rockettes.
They're pretty good. They're coordinated.
Why are you searching for words?
Yeah,
they've all been used.
Indescribable. No, they're they're on time, you know. They are in sync. They somehow, I don't know how that works.
Since 1933, they've been doing that. I got to tell you, some of them are getting kind of tired, but they still got it, and it's amazing when you think of it, when they play the music, you realize this is what your grandparents would have enjoyed, this kind of a show.
Yeah.
And it's just cool sitting in this massive auditorium, can hold 6,000 people. And think of the history that's gone on there. It's technically the world's largest movie theater. They don't show movies there anymore.
Right.
And I don't know what movies they ever would show there that drew 6,000 people. But I guess when you didn't have, you know, cable TV back in the 1940s.
Metropolis.
Yeah, okay. That came out before. Well, I don't know when it opened, to be honest. I don't know when the Rockettes started. I'm not sure when Radio City began. But the thing is, it was part of the whole New York holiday season experience, which turned out to be a hellish one for us because we were walking through the streets and it was just so ridiculously jam-packed with tourists. And, you know, I don't like to ever be a tourist, especially not in my own city. But it was kind of funny seeing how people were failing at simple things like walking across a street. So we saw some massive crowds by the tree and by St. Patrick's and by Radio City, and it was hellish, as I say.
I can't believe you even brought it up. It was too crazy. I mean, everything you would not want to experience as far as having people bunched up on all sides of you, getting then pushed this way and that. I mean, we got on one corner that was right around Rockefeller Center that was, everybody was trying to take a picture of the tree, and it was a complete just traffic jam of people.
Wait. The way you said that, though, you did take a picture of the tree.
No.
Kyle, for God's sake, if you didn't take a picture of the tree, we have nothing to remember that tree by. Do you think anybody else took a picture of the tree? No. It was up to you to take a picture of... The same thing with the Statue of Liberty. You didn't take a picture of that either.
It's been photographed. I think things like that that have been covered by others needn't be something I redo or try to improve upon. There's so just so much perfection
you
there.
You think others
already.
Can do the job? You
yeah,
think
I think
others
done
can,
it. Yeah.
can. Wow. Okay.
As far as subject matter goes. Yeah, that's no. You won't find me fumbling for my camera in those situations.
I was taught that if you don't do the job, no one else will.
You know. Okay, so we went into St. Patrick's as well, and this reminds me. So we're in there, and
fine,
they're going
I wore my hat by accident.
Bags.
I wore my hat by accident, and I got yelled at by you.
No, it wasn't that. No, this woman was like dragging like six people in, like. Four adults, like three kids, four kids, whatever. She wanted to go in there and is like dragging them all. We're all crammed in and they're checking bags going into the cathedral. And she's just about to get the bags checked or something like that and is with several other people. And everyone's stopping right where they're checking bags to take a picture towards the altar from the back of the church. And so this woman embodying pretty much you have to just be there, you know. It's like I was there, I was in the right time. So she's just basically in the door, takes the picture, and then the like little girl starts crying or something, and I hear the other adults saying we're saved by such and such girl. By basically, she had a tantrum in the church, and they didn't get their bags checked, but they got that picture, and it's the same picture everybody else was stopping, cramming up the entrance to the cathedral. Taking that silly picture, and it's what of the heaters hanging in the way of a clear shot of the entire altar and everybody else taking pictures in there. It's just absurd.
That little girl was channeling the feelings of everybody in the cathedral right then, and that's why she started crying to prevent this from going further. Yeah, and that's important. And I thank that little girl for what she did. It's important.
it was hilarious to me though. I had to laugh to myself because granted, you could walk around. It should be an open, welcoming place, and all of that. But it epitomized this thing of you have to rush and go and be in front of the Fifth Avenue window, and then go here and then go there. And if you really get caught up in it, and you can't sort of fly by the seat of your pants, you can't be relaxed about your experience in the city. You're not gonna have a good time. Like if you're neurotic and crazy about I have to see this, I have to. I can only imagine what out of towners. People that are visiting are thinking when they do these sort of whirlwind walking tours, it probably they accept so much that is completely generated by them and is could be avoided, I guess.
I hear that, but I think a little bit more neurotic behavior might be helpful only because they were moving too damn slowly.
Yeah, the ambling.
It was like a bunch of elephants blocking the entire street, and I'm not just referring to people from Iowa when I say that. I'm referring to all kinds of people that simply don't know how to walk in the streets of New York.
Right.
Case in point, just walking down to see the tree. You know, I thought that would be nice. We walked past the tree, but we just got clogged with people that were just taking eight people wide pictures of the tree in back of them and blocking all the progress of the pedestrians, and no one knew how to get past them, and we were just standing, not moving.
Yeah, that reminds me of a woman in front of the department store with a baby carriage. In taking a picture not of the windows, but across the street of the tree in the background, So she's taking a picture of, she's standing between the department store window, the baby carriage, blocking, like, tons of people on the sidewalk, so she can get a picture, a clear shot or
she
something.
She blocked a fire engine, couldn't get past her. My God.
It goes on and on. The vanity is, it's ridiculous.
And who are you going to show those pictures to? Are you going to be proud of that?
You show it to the baby when it grows up and say, hey, I used you to get this picture. And those baby carriages, can I just say one thing about the baby carriages?
Yeah, oh.
People, when did mothers start using those as battering rams to get a place in the crowd?
Yeah.
I got hit by three different baby carriages yesterday. We were in the city, yes, and it hurt.
Yeah.
It hurt.
Yeah.
You know, they hit you in the ankles.
You got it in the ankle then.
Yeah,
you
and if it's a heavy baby, there's more weight when they hit you with it. And they use that so that they can plow their way through. I respect that. That's a New Yorker type thing, to plow through the crowd. Yeah, but come on, for God's sake, using a baby carriage?
Yeah, maybe, I mean, if you're getting in a subway car, but not with a baby carriage.
It was pretty
I saw a woman with a double baby carriage. I think you saw her, too, mm-hmm. sort of when we were walking away from that area. And, I mean, she had the walk, but the walk signal, but, like, ran out into this intersection, like, with the baby carriage first. I mean, I would be a little more trepidatious about maybe stepping off the curb with my double baby, but these kids are flying in the wheelchair
uh-huh.
off the curb into the middle of the road. And, I mean, how can you be so sure? I guess you just get very comfortable with operating these large children transporters. But, gol, she just, like, shoved that thing and was flying, like, running, basically, through the intersection with this baby carriage. I don't know how they do it. But we made it, just in our own sort of walking and ambulating.
Yeah. It's something to see, but I don't want to do it again. I really don't.
I'll be happy if I never, ever, 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 ever do that again in my entire life.
But you have to do New Year's in Times Square. Oh, my God. You'll love that.
Oh, my God. No.
It makes this pale by comparison.
No, I draw the line. I'm sorry. I'll watch it on TV, like, an hour after it happens. On, like, the late news.
How that's even exciting, watching it on TV. It's like, they could play 10 years ago, the ball dropping. Who's going to know the difference? You've done it once before. Why not just show a tape of the thing over and over again and make some new programming? So, there's a budget that goes into this, you know, and it's wasted money because you're showing the same thing except a different time.
Why not start a new tradition? Why don't we have fireworks in New York?
I mean,
it works in Berlin.
That's true. That would be an interesting way to combat the current fear that we have of everything making loud noises.
Well, we'll get it out of our system.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, people won't feel the need to be running around with handguns and so on. We will get the sort of explosive thing out all at once. We could start a new tradition. Again, like, why do you have to do the ball every year? No, I mean, they don't change the ball. It's still Swarovski or whatever, the crystal. It's not that different from year to year. Why does New York's tradition have to be fixed?
I'll tell you why. Because of sponsorship, because of corporations, because they have paid for it, and they demand to have this year after year after year, and we're just a bunch of sheep that go along with it because we don't know any better. But I agree, there should be different traditions. In fact, we should take over a different square and do something even better and draw all the people away, and then that'll be ruined, and we'll have to go someplace else.
I like that.
Yeah, that's the American way.
Yeah, so they're already setting up for New Year's down there in Times Square.
Already? They've been setting up for New Year's since October.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're setting up.
There's all kinds of generators and...
Yeah, the generators, biodiesel generators.
I was admiring that.
Yeah, that's something kind of new, I think.
Well, we've seen it at events, because we go to these events every now and then, and oft there's power for all of, people, campers, whatever kind mm-hmm. of event it is. And I actually... was curious in seeing the generators there, but so at the camps we've seen trends with them is that they're quiet running, very large generators can be very quiet, and a lot of them are running on biofuels now, which is really sort of good in the sense that you're placing these in proximity to people.
You said
right?
You saw them at camps, I mean the hacker camps, right?
Yeah, we've seen them at a bunch of hacker camps.
Right.
I can go into all that, but it's also used in sort of movie and installations. Most of the time for cinema, though, it's like built into a truck and so on. Mm-hmm. These were sort of dropped off because they probably need a substantial amount of power to power the stage and all the sort of support equipment for that production, whereas a movie company would sort of handle it all off the trailer. I'm learning so much about New
York. One thing I learned yesterday when we walked by one of them in Times Square, you saw one of these diesel generators, all this smoke coming from it, and you pointed out to me, no, that's the guy making hot dogs next to it.
Yeah, it was.
The thing wasn't making any smoke.
No, and they're really, really silent. So the ones we noticed, we saw a couple, one around the corner, but there were three in a row right in Times Square, and they're all they have stickers that say they burn biodiesel and so on, which is cool. And my theory is they don't connect to any line power there because it's easier to rent the generators and budget in fuel, like, okay, we're going to pay $1,000, whatever, for fuel for these three generators, and then they don't have to tie into anything. They do it all off their own power. Because there's so much there, how would you even, who would you talk to?
Mm-hmm.
Like Con Edison, like they'd probably have a whole rigmarole to like get some hot leads coming out of the ground. I mean, God knows where you would even look for power. There's so much there. So it's probably just easier for a production to just bring their own and forget about anything tying in like we do or like other people would at a venue.
Yeah, that's good to see a different way of thinking about doing something that you've done the same way for decades. Biodiesel generators to produce all this power. Not using the grid.
Yeah, and
not using fossil fuels.
Yeah,
and Kyle,
it's also good for redundancy. So
have we talked about this with our lying diesel
no,
Volkswagen?
We should say
we have one of the diesels that lied to us and said it was doing emissions at a certain level when it wasn't, because someone at VW programmed it to give readings when it was being tested and somehow know when it wasn't being tested and then go back to the normal readings, which are unacceptable and which they still have to figure out how to remedy.
Yeah, it's ongoing.
It's ongoing. So the car is great. You know, it gets great mileage and, you know, it's an amazing vehicle, but this is not cool, what they did, obviously. But what you figured out how to do is have the thing, instead of running traditional diesel, run biofuel instead. Which means we're not using fossil fuel, at least, and that's one significant accomplishment, I believe. And we're also using the same fuel that we use for heating.
Yeah.
So that's awesome that we can, through one tank. You have to kind of set it up, and this is where you excel. You set up a hose, and we actually bought one of those little I don't even know what you call the things. The thing with the handle that you pump gas with.
Yeah, they're I guess like an automatic shut off fuel nozzle.
That's the word, nozzle. We don't have a tank, you know, but we have the nozzle, and so we have our own, and we simply plug it into the tank, and whenever we need to, we fuel up the car, and then we can throw a switch and heat something instead.
Yeah,
it's really awesome that it's the same fuel.
Yeah. It was something like you and I had, we knew about, I mean, I knew about it from my own sort of experimentation and knowledge of that realm, and it was just something we had sort of talked about, like, oh, yeah, you know, we could do this, or wouldn't that be neat if we could just convert this, and around when we got wind of this cheating with the emissions scandal and so on, I started thinking really seriously, like, okay, what would it take for us to really take control over what type of fuel we put in our car? And I kind of, you know, you kind of look at it like running a fleet, like mm-hmm. A lot of people run fleets of trucks or whatever for businesses and so on. So you kind of have to look at it with that attitude of, you know, bulk and ordering in large numbers and handling fluids and stuff. But the nuts and bolts of it are pretty simple, and basically, I want to switch it all over so that it's solar, and it's pretty much ready to go. So we'll have a solar dispensing capacity for our transportation needs, which allows us to buy in bulk. It allows us to pump fuel when maybe the power is out.
Mm-hmm.
And the other kind of cool thing is that the fuel is local, so it's all New York State fuel. It's refined here in New York. And we're basically recycling what otherwise would be thrown out or used in home heating. It's basically fryer oil.
We don't smell like French fries, though, going down the road.
No, we don't.
You explained this to me the other day.
Yeah.
Because it's refined, and that's also why we have to pay for it, too.
It's a good distinction, actually.
We pay about the same amount for this as we would for regular diesel, but it's a choice to not use fossil fuels.
Yeah. And it takes a little bit of research. The rates are really competitive out here. I'm impressed, and I think they're doing good things. I think there's going to be more of that, and I think New York could do a lot.
Well, I mean,
just in building things and creating infrastructure, I think they're situated very nicely.
When you look this up, there was really only one choice compared to out west,
right,
where there are many companies doing this and many places that you can get it. It was really kind of hard and only one choice to get it out here. So I think, yeah, there's a lot of room to grow.
Absolutely. I mean, the West Coast is mature, but it's also really immature because a lot of the things that do exist out there are done badly, or there's a lot of drama, or there's a lot of venture capital, so it's sort of like hollow money, or it's people that are just so righteous that, like, they can't even talk, you know, business in, like, a larger context. And just a lot of fragmentation and various levels of development. Here, I think it's just a couple key players chose it and saw the value in getting recycled oils and creating infrastructure for that. And so there's a couple companies. I'm just impressed with the way they just took it on and implemented it for the region, and it's actually driven a lot by home heating, because a lot of the heat out here is done by heating oil. And one really neat thing about biofuels, or biodiesel in particular, is that it can be used in home heating furnaces and home heating situations and so on. So it is really more prevalent, more known as a home heating oil. But the thing about home heating oil, and it's distinct, is that it's dyed, and that's for tax reasons. So when you're using it for transport, you have to pay the taxes, and you have to make the distinction that you'd like to use it for highway use and so on. So there's some subtleties there, but it's due to the mature kind of home heating and bio heat industry here on the island and in New York in general that you're able to source things. You just then have to kind of make the distinction and know what to ask for and tell kind of your supplier what you plan to do and you know, order the right type of fuel accordingly and so on. So we're really happy with it. And, we have a little bit of a petroleum blend because of the cold weather. Bio tends to solidify in really cold.
Yeah, you have to keep that in mind, too.
Yeah,
there are different mixes throughout the year that you have to pay attention to.
Yeah, so it's like a B90. It's like a 10% bio blend. And also, like, there's pumps for kerosene around here, so we could also blend with kerosene, which has a really low cold flow point.
When you say 10%, you mean...
I mean 10% clear, like, ultra-low sulfur clear diesel.
Right, and then
like
90% bio.
90% biodiesel, yeah. So there's a bunch of terms as far as, like, what you do, and you can blend both diesels, or in cases where you're, like, in the mountains in really cold climates, you can blend, like, 20% kerosene. And so you'll still have a really high bio blend. But it's a fuel alternative, and it's something that for transport people aren't that aware of. Mm-hmm. People, like truck guys, might be familiar with, like, B20, but that's about as much as people are willing to put in, like, a truck or this and that and the other thing. So it's kind of tough, but the kind of unknown thing about biodiesel, it's a drop-in fuel replacement. And at least with Volkswagens and Mercedes, you can run B100 all day long. Like, you can use straight biodiesel in no kind of blended configuration, and it drops in and works fine, especially with modern vehicles that have the right kinds of rubber not rubber. They have synthetic rubbers instead of rubber. And so on. So there's, like, little things like that, but the knowledge about how to implement it in cars isn't quite there. Like, people don't really realize you can run on an alternative fuel.
Yeah, but and this then, is how we get there, by experimenting and by just doing things that no one else has done before.
Right, and then, you know, you get the range. People that don't really know, and they're only listening to the manufacturers, and they sort of discourage high blends. But then you get the other end of the spectrum, people that really do understand this stuff, and they talk about energy density, and they're comparing. They're saying, okay, well, you know, biodiesel has a slightly lower energy density profile than petroleum diesel. There are arguments, to be made across the board, especially with this emission stuff, with the TDIs, as well as home heating. I mean, it's in a home heating setting, it's still emitting higher NOx levels. So there's areas in this realm that there are pluses and minuses. I mean, also biofuels are non-carcinogenic. They're not toxic as well as being able to like dissolve in the environment. There's other virtues to having them around, and the whole recycling and like closed loop of carbon and so on. So anyway, it's a really interesting thing. I'm kind of into it, obviously, but we've been exploring and having some success.
So between this, proliferation of solar farms in the area, the future of wind turbines, we're seeing changes. We actually are seeing change. We complain all the time about how things don't change, but they do. They will if we just take steps ourselves to do that.
And it really does start with you. I mean, you get kind of daunted, and then there's all these like kind of canned phrases of like think globally, live locally, or whatever, act locally. But
if you're not part of the solution,
oh God,
you're part of
yeah.
I forgot the rest of it.
The point is, I mean, if you don't make your bed, it's not gonna be made when you want to go to sleep. It's like you must create the kind of world you would like to exist in, and your environment starts with what's around you. And so I really encourage people to question things. If they don't like the plastics in their keyboards, mm-hmm. then question it. What kind of plastic is it? If you question filling up at a certain pump, or you know, you question the sort of daily expenses and things that are around you all the time, and start to wonder, how could I improve this? And those little efficiencies, they're the hallmark of sort of environmental action. Really, it's about the whole light bulb thing, or to turn off the water, all that. I mean, it sounds silly, but it really is about those little changes around you, because you then can talk about it in your community, and that is a ripple. I can't emphasize enough. I mean, it is thankless. It's, you know, it's not a competition, and the greenwashing can get disgusting, but it really is.
Greenwashing?
Yeah, this, like, competition of, like, who's the most green, or greenwashing really is...
There's a word for that. I can't believe there's a word for that.
Greenwashing really is when you take something that's inherently dirty and you try to make it look, you know, you make it sound clean. Right. And that's a little bit of what Volkswagen's guilty of, and so on.
Like, but people who talk about green coal.
Yeah, that is a perfect example. Green coal. It's ridiculous. First of all, coal's black.
Yeah, it ain't green, folks.
It's anthracite, uh-huh. is what you want to look into, and it's very black. I mean, so it's ridiculous. But, yeah, they say, or they align things with, now you get less greenwashing, and it's more about jobs. At domestic energy, you know, you're getting a lot of that now. But my point is, you get to evangelize a little bit, because people ask you, you know, why are you doing that? And I had a lot of people come up to us, what are you doing with that gas, you know, that nozzle? You're pumping and you're doing all this stuff. And I was able to, you know, let people know, enroll them, like, what's going on, what's possible, that we're saving money, that we're recycling, you know, little things like that. And also the actual emissions, like your immediate world around you is affected by your emissions. You know, your blissful idea of what your Cadillac is not what's coming out the tailpipe. Like, that's in your head. That's marketing. Mm-hmm. So, and we're kind of learning that with this emissions scandal, that you really ought to be concerned about your impact, because however small a part you play, it is a huge deal in the grand scheme, because we all have that part. So those little things you can do to save a little bit of energy and be more efficient, or more just conscious, like aware and high tech. I mean, there's so many tools out there. There's so much different technology and instrumentation and ways to understand your world and the resources you use, that it can be fun. Like you can make these little changes that are huge in your life.
And you know, you don't have to have technological ability. I mean, you certainly do. You're able to design these things and make them work. But other people, they simply have to express the interest and start a dialogue. because there will be people who do have these skills who can make it happen, but it has to be in response to something. There has to be an interest in getting it done. And the more people who support this, who feel these are good trends, these are good ideas to pursue, the more we'll see people stepping forward and making that happen. You'll see more more biofuel. You'll see more solar and wind and alternative energies. And it won't just be, as they say, a pipe dream. It'll be reality. In Germany, it already is. We drive around there and we see nothing but wind turbines and solar farms. And they are mostly renewable energy now. And yeah. They'll probably be total renewable energy at some point in the very near future.
Yeah.
And think about what that means. People seem to think it means that they don't have to pay anything for electricity. No, it doesn't mean that. It just means that you're not going to run out of it, that it's going to be, as they say, renewable, and you won't be polluting the skies, and you'll have better environment improving the atmosphere. These are important things.
Yeah, and your self-sufficiency, mm-hmm. it goes up. It goes way up as far, and that is directly resultant of diversification.
Mm-hmm.
When you diversify the amounts of energy sources to a community, you're adding a sort of resiliency. I'm not for throwing technological. That is a pitfall. Throwing technological solutions at everything is mm-hmm. certainly a pitfall. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the right kind of engineering, the right kind of building, and the right ingenuity and spirit. Action placed in on the right projects, well placed,
right,
is meaningful, and that's the kind of stuff that people should support. The technology, throwing technology at stuff, that is exactly the what people who don't believe in climate change people who don't want to be in action now will stick close to. They'll say, well, we'll figure it out. We'll clean up nuclear down the road. You know, we'll have technology by then to launch it into the sun, whatever.
This is what really bugs me, and I think you're raising a very good point. People that think technology will solve all the problems in the future, even though we don't have the answers now. Nuclear power is a great example of that. How do we store all this nuclear waste for thousands of years? Oh, don't worry, we'll take care of it. Meanwhile, you know, you can't even find a picture from a year ago. You know, we're not very good at keeping track of things as individuals or as societies. Why do you think we keep digging things up? We have no idea where they came from or how old this is or what cemetery we just unearthed. We do not keep track of things over the years, over the decades, certainly not over the centuries. And to say that, yeah, we can keep this safe for 10,000 years is the height of arrogance and just a very unrealistic attitude. Now, that said, technology can do amazing things, but not if you're slaves to it, not if you don't question it, not if you don't say, hey, you know what, the way it was done before when it wasn't so technological actually worked better. Maybe we don't need to throw technology at this particular problem.
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
And we run into this all the time with everything, you know, from as simple as a phone to infrastructure throughout our nation. There are things that you don't need to do, even though it's kind of cool to do them. And by doing these kind of cool things, you wind up screwing up a lot of other things. You need to balance it out. Technology is a tool. It can be used in certain ways.
It's not a panacea.
Exactly.
It's
yes.
not a panacea. You must be judicious. I believe that is the word.
There's a lot of $20 words today.
Judicious.
Wow. Yes.
In your placement, in your use and understanding and reliance.
Judicious is not a panacea.
Yeah.
That's a good bumper sticker.
It's absolutely it's critical because we're in unreal times, but it takes a certain pragmatism, a certain technological realist, dare I say, to make sure that we're using the resources we have, but also not cannibalizing things that we may look back and want to use or want to learn from.
Yeah, it's the way I look at it. There are people who dismiss everything that someone over a certain age says, or they dismiss everything that someone under a certain age says. And both of those people, both of those groups of people are cutting themselves off from a vast repository of knowledge, whether it be what's new and different, or history, which is so important. And I've always been, I've always had a real passion for history and learning from that. There's nothing like watching a film from the 1940s and getting into it. There's nothing like listening to old music and really digging it. But there's also nothing like talking to somebody from a different generation, whether it's somebody immensely older than you or a lot younger than you, and learning something and having an actual exchange of ideas. And there are so many of us who do not do that and who simply dismiss that as something that we can never understand, that it doesn't jive with our values. And you see the same thing in the technological world, because there are people who say, well, technology is the answer to everything, and the way we did it in the past, well, we were stupid then. And I got to say, you know, people from 500 years ago were no more stupid than we are now. We just had a different set of parameters to work with. And there are things to learn from perspectives and from things that were written and observed back then that we can apply today. And vice versa. You know, there are people with looking to the future, technology-wise, that we should be listening to and applying things to old ideas as well. You start dismissing things, you start dismissing entire points of view, you wind up missing out and crippling yourself tremendously.
Yeah. It's one of those things. Anyway, we'll come back to it. I'm just thinking about art and things being in situ. When you say something is in situ, it's like something that is created in, like the Sistine Chapel, that is created in the building. So
situ?
In situ.
In situ.
S-I-T-U. It's Latin.
Well, I didn't know we were speaking Latin all of a sudden. This is one thing that I closed myself off to.
But
okay.
The point is, the medium, we are obsessed with the medium. And I find this, when you mentioned technologically, people throw the latest and the greatest. Well, you just need to do this at that, and that'll fix that. And just because you're talking about something that's old or something that's different or something that's that was used, now it isn't. And this attitude of knowing that, well, I'll just say the latest thing. And in that attitude of knowing,
yes,
you'll have your solution. I'll be right and validated by this thing you're referring to in situ. It is a certain specific file type or system from a certain
era.
You're
kind of doing that yourself, you know. You're saying giving out this word that the person doesn't know the meaning of, and they feel like you're right.
Yeah.
But they don't actually have the answer.
I guess I want people to appreciate things in their context. Like, if it's information and it's in context, it's still valuable in the context. And to dismiss it out of hand right away, right? Because you don't like the format or the medium the medium is hard. it doesn't validate your quote solution. So, and that goes for a lot across all things. You know, just because something is old doesn't mean it doesn't have valid instructive things about the world to say. I mean, I'm getting really abstract, but I truly believe that. So, by in situ, I mean, you know, because it's an arcane format or whatever we're talking about, a machine or something, you can still work with it and restore it.
You should still be able to work with it.
Find out how it's relevant. Yeah, it ought to stand the test of time.
I can't tell you how many times a certain format has been adopted, and then everybody moves on to something else, and those poor people that still have things in that format are out of luck because nothing can read it anymore.
Like,
and that's just bad thinking, you know, not being able to support things from the past, whether it be photographs or video or audio even. You know, we have that voicemail system. We can't even listen to the voicemail messages from a mere 15 years ago because
exactly.
The formats have changed, and even the people who designed it have no idea how to play the audio. That's not thinking forward or smartly, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, people adopt that kind of thinking and just say, well, this is the right way to do it because it's the newest way to do it, and you either adapt to that or stay behind. That's not good thinking.
Yeah, it's unhealthy. It's a symptomatic of consumerism, I think. I think it's really what it boils down to is materialism and consumerism finding its way into enterprise, finding its way into businesses, and the technology life cycle, dare I say. Basically, consumption and keeping up is built into the life cycle of technology. I mean, what if we just threw out the Sistine Chapel after Google walked around there with one of their cameras and said, "That's it. We got it in file. Let's knock the building down. We're done with it.
It's digital, man. It's better.
Yeah,
no,
nobody's
got to
go visit the chapel.
Why analog visiting? No.
It hurts your neck. You got to look up. It's terrible.
And there's risks too. You could fall and hurt yourself.
Anyway,
I hope stay in your home and just watch it digitally. Everything is digital now.
I hope I made my point.
Well, you did, because this is an MP3 that people are listening to now, and it's digital. And
you know what? We have calls.
Yeah, but we only have 2 minutes.
I'm afraid.
Do you want to delay and take calls? Do you want to try to do that?
I don't know if I can do it that quick.
All right, well, let's see. Kyle is going to be tested now.
I will be tested right now.
We're in delay with your phone calls, and I can now hear myself just fine. So,
And we're in delay with your phone calls, and I can now hear myself just fine. So, we'll take this call. Hi, you are on WUSB.
The printed word.
What about the printed word?
The printed word is the most powerful thing ever created, ever.
Well, know, as magazine publishers, we agree with you wholeheartedly. But I have to say, the printed word, yes. If Homer's Odyssey was written on a Kindle way back then, I guarantee you we wouldn't have it today. And that's nothing against Kindles, but things change. Technology changes, formats change. The printed word, words on a piece of paper, as long as the paper is able to survive, those words will always be there. Now imagine an alien race sending some kind of a probe out to us, and which would you prefer to get from them? Something written on a scroll, on a piece of paper, or a file format in some alien computer language?
I take it on Times New Roman on, like, 100-weight papyrus.
Nice. I like that. You got class.
I'm dead serious.
Yeah.
Girlfriend's fucking panty.
And
thanks for that.
Now you've been tested on the delay system. Wow.
You're listening to WPK.
Yes. So that's what you get when you open up the phone lines. Okay, so thanks, listeners, for that. Let's go out of delay now.
Yes, we're going to go right out of delay. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. This is Off the Wall. And I'm afraid we're going to head out.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. You really got thrown for a loop there, didn't you? Okay. Well, yes, we are out of time. Thank you, listeners. And you know what? Next time, we're not going to open up the phones until we get a bunch of phone calls so that idiots don't get on and risk our license and whatever else. Write to us, otw@2600.com. You know, if we get 100 letters saying that they appreciate the things we do, we might feel a little bit better tonight.
Like that. If you're so hurt, why then don't you show it? You say you lost your faith, but that's not where it's at. You have I used to be among the crowd you're in with. Do you take me for such a fool as to make contact with one who tries to hide what it don't know to begin with?
Bob, would it help if you put the lyrics up there on the stand?
No, it don't help at all, man.